Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio, we have Lisa Murphy.
Looking good, thank you.
That's a matter of opinion.
It's the jammies. I love the jammy episodes.
There's an older waft.
Oh, shut up. There is not.
And Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
And me, your compassionate,
host,
loving, caring host.
The host with the most.
I don't know if any of that is true, but here we are again. We are going to unpack something from the man,
the legend,
the hero, the myth, Dan Hodgins.
Swoon faint.
Dan is just awesome. And
get the smelling salts, Natasha.
Wake up, honey.
Oh, yeah, we moved a fainting couch.
Dan.
We moved a fainting couch into the studio. That, mostly for me, in case I... So Dan has got this whole idea that maybe sometimes we need to... And tell me if I'm getting this wrong, Lisa. Sometimes we need to switch up our mindset when it comes to dealing with kids. We get in this habit of focusing on things we consider negative, and that's where we lock in with a lot of kids, especially the kids that we may personally find hard to work with.
Challenging.
Yes, challenging. And so the spin Dan puts on it is to, hey, pause and think about, what are they good at? Timmy, you're very good at throwing blocks.
Yep.
Janie, you are very good at crawling under my skin and scratching on my last fucking nerve. I don't think Dan would say that.
He might.
but that whole idea of flipping
reframing,
the script.
Reframing, yeah. I use the word reframing. And I'm a big fan of this.
Thoughts?
Well, to me, what helped me with this mind shift was when I went and heard Thomas Armstrong do a workshop 1,000 years ago. I don't even know if he's still doing training seminars. And he introduced us all to what he called the law of thirds, which I immediately stole and started using in my work as well. The idea being that when it comes to this, when it comes to anything, a third of the kids get it, understand it, implement it right away, right out the gate. And a third of them get it eventually, you know, like, oh, that's the cleanup music. Oh, okay. And then another third absolutely never, ever, ever get it. And you can run this through every single possible scenario you can think of with nap time, what else? Cleaning up, field trip permission slips with parents. It fits. There's a third that does it right away.
Family-style meals.
Families rebelling against it. There's a third who get it, and a third who will get it eventually, and a third who never get it. But the point was that what he was making is that we'll tend to, and often without realizing it, we're overly focused on the last third of what they never do. Mm-hmm. You never clean up. You're never on time. You never put your shoes on. You never listen. No. And because we're so overly focused then on what they can't do, that our eyes literally just are not seeing what they do bring to the table. And I have found that a mashup of what I learned from Thomas Armstrong and from Dan has helped when people do reach out and say, oh my gosh, I'm at this point, this kid, and frustrated, and I'm at my wit's end. And as Dan says, pulling you to the end of your rope, I think is the phrase Dan used, is going back and taking 10 days to pay attention to what they are doing. What are they good at. And if nothing else, for the next 10 days, the adult is is challenged to just completely reframe how they're looking at the situation, mm-hmm. which doesn't mean that I'm saying that, because I'm not in that classroom, but maybe what's going on might be some negative behavior or whatnot. But just for a minute, put that behavior on pause and see the child as opposed to only seeing the behavior. And I think sometimes that's what ends up happening. We get distracted by the behavior. We have this emotional response to the behavior, and we forget that, one, there's a little kid, and two, that that behavior might be trying to get some information out to us, but we're so locked and loaded on only seeing what they're not doing.
Yeah, yeah. And that behavior may be 100% developmentally appropriate.
Oh, there usually is.
Yeah, yeah, but we are carrying around baggage that skews our view of it. It just kind of shifts. It makes everything a little bit blurry or shifts everything to the left a little bit, and we're not getting as clear a picture as we'd like. And this getting locked in on those kind of things and failing to see the other things that might be shining lights for mm-hmm. us if we could see them it's not us being bad people. It's kind of just a human wiring thing.
I also think it's just caught up in the like autopilot. You know, I've got this schedule I got to implement. I got this curriculum I got to implement. Da, 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 yeah. And the fact that you're screaming when I'm trying to read this book because I think that I have to be reading this book, you know, I feel like I have to get through your screaming or stop your screaming in order to execute my idea of what should be
your
happening.
Agenda. Yeah.
My agenda. Mm-hmm. Instead of realizing that there's probably a decent reason why this kid is screaming,
yeah.
you know, but in my brain, I'm so focused on just get to the end of the book that I'm not making room for the other like real life, real time variables that are still present in this environment.
Yeah, yeah. And my understanding is that our brains are wired with a slight bias towards paying attention to those negative things in our environment, those things that kind of get under our skin, because we're wired to pay attention to threats and dangers and risks and we're not living in a world where we got to watch out for a lot of saber-toothed tigers anymore. And so
we
do though still have a wiring towards that kind of thing, and so we pay attention to these little things and kind of gloss over the things that are probably more mundane, more positive. They don't stand out to us as much. And so we've got to kind of shift our focus away from that and it's a biological wiring thing, and so we can kind of get a clearer picture. It goes back to something I talk about in a lot of the burnout sessions I do, the good dog versus the evil dog.
Mm-hmm. Who you
and,
feeding?
Yeah, and it's, the quick story is, you know, grandfather's out camping with grandchild, and they're out in the nature, and the last night of their trip, they're sitting around the campfire and looking at the stars and poking at the embers, and grandfather says, you know, I have two dogs that live in me, a good dog and an evil dog. And the evil dog is always fighting the good dog. And he stops talking and pokes at the fire. And after a few minutes, the kid says, Papa, Papa, which dog wins? And the old guy looks at the kid and says, well, the one that I feed the most. And if we've got that slight bias towards feeding the evil dog, it's real hard to step back and see the positive. It's real hard to step back and ask yourself, what is this kid good at? And it's that reframing, but being able to pull ourselves away from the emotionality of it is a valuable tool in not only in our work with children, but in life in general.
Success story. So I got an email. It was actually about a year ago. Well, by the time you hear this, it would be more than that. But anyway, so I was traveling, got an email from same scenario, right? You know, the kid and da-da-da-da-da, and I don't know what to do, and it's frustrating, and colleagues and coworkers, we're all, you know, we want to be the best we can be, but he's getting in the way and so distracted, da-da-da. So I gave her my usual, as I've already said, 10 days. I want you to keep track. I want you to write down 10 things that he does really well. Then just 10 things that he brings to the table. And didn't hear from her. And so, you know, of course I'm thinking, whatever.
She took it with a grain of salt.
Whether she did it, whether she didn't, anyway. 4 months later, she sent me an email, and I get goosebumps when I think about it. She took a photo of, they ended up writing down almost 100 things that they had they had no idea that this, they had never seen it. Mm-hmm. It had been happening. It wasn't like it was all new behavior on the part of this little boy, but it was the first time that they had allowed themselves to see it. And she's like, we had no idea that he, at all this time, had been going up to like the shyer, more quieter kids and helping them like put their shoes on and stuff like that. But we never saw
because this other
evil dog is the one that we kept feeding. And I was just so touched, not only with the fact that she got back and let me know, but that she took it very seriously, and she was the aide and the assistant. So not that that matters, but you know, sometimes that's a hierarchy thing, right? Then the assistant goes back and says, hey, let's give this a go. There's taking a big risk, right? And just to see that their whole mindset towards this kid shifted and how much of a better experience everybody now was going to have because the adults were willing to reframe.
Yeah. And it's
a more positive experience for the
for
kid.
Everybody, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, not an easy thing to do.
No,
and already the mother was worried, you know, that we're going to get kicked out, you know. And so even bringing the mom in and seeing, you know, whatever people have been telling you, this is also what your kid brings to the table.
Mm-hmm. And so how do we get better at that?
You need to have people in your world who are able to say to you, what does he do well? Well, he's really good at making me crazy. Well, awesome. I appreciate your honesty at the start. And let's go back. And I also think, and I know I'm repeating myself, but it's very subtle, but I think it's really important. It doesn't mean that we're saying that smacking Mackenzie on the head is okay.
No.
But we're honoring that it's developmentally appropriate. So our response to that behavior is what needs to be, that needs the intervention, not necessarily the kid. Our reaction to what is unfolding might need the tweak.
Yeah, and just putting a different spin on the situation is likely to help you see solutions. When you have that kid that the example I used earlier, throwing blocks, really good at throwing blocks, well, when you see that they're really good at throwing blocks, then maybe it's time for that environment to have some more opportunities for throwing stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the blocks, which you, for whatever reason, don't want to be throwing. And we unpacked this.
Shut up. I know.
A while ago.
You're baiting me.
No. I mean, but yeah, it's all about, we get locked in on a thing and so create opportunities for throwing. And if it can't be in the block area or with blocks, there's plenty of other spaces and things that can be thrown.
So book tease number two, I actually reduced it down to looking at the verb. Look at the verb for a minute. Stop making another Dan-ism. Stop making moral issues out of developmental ones, i.e. hitting, throwing, spitting, screaming, run, whatever it might be, and focus on the verb. The child is showing you, telling you somehow that they're needing to do the action. So how can we find a way to put this action in the space without us turning it into some moral dilemma?
Yeah, I hear this one a lot about kids climbing.
Yeah, well,
and
they're monkeys. Of course, they need to climb.
They're you know, the reason you might have problems with kids climbing is because kids are climbers, and if you don't have anything in the environment that is specifically meant to be climbed,
they're gonna find
stuff to climb.
Like
and
those
so,
stair step bookcases.
Yeah,
I always try like that in the workshop. What is that screaming to a toddler? That $400 bookcase is just like.
Yeah, and they're stepping on the paperbacks and bending them all because they're climbing to the top of those suckers. And even the straight up bookcases. I mean, those shelves become rungs.
Steps.
And so a lot of this is about adjusting the environment so that the thing that's,
and our attitude
that, yeah.
and our response, I would say.
Well, yeah, because this like modeling for the students, for the kids also saying, hey, you can't do this. But here's another option.
Yeah,
and
you're
then it makes them stop and think, well, I was told no, but what else can I
you're
do?
You're needing to do some climbing.
Yeah.
So let's go find something that you can climb on. Mm-hmm. And that might mean a modification of the environment in that if it's a toddler room, I get rid of that particular bookcase and still have books, but displayed in another area, getting rid of that invitation to engage in that
behavior.
Instead
of saying no all the time.
If you put the books in a basket on the floor, they might still climb it. But it's
probably
not going to...
Not as much.
You're not going to worry if they fall. You're not going to worry if they fall off the 6-inch high basket. So you mentioned the other Danism, the stop making moral issues out of developmental ones.
Some of the best advice I ever got.
Yeah, and I think that relates a lot to this whole idea of what are they good at. So maybe we should unpack that phrase, that terminology, that Danism a little bit.
The moral issues?
Yeah. And so what?
Well, so again, sometimes there's so much of the mashup. A lot of us are out there on the road saying kind of the same thing, but we have our kind of trademarky way of saying it. Is what
we're putting moral judgments on things like throwing and hitting and biting and arguing and all of these kind of things. And look, kids, 2-year-olds bite.
It's developmentally appropriate, but let's be real, it's socially unacceptable.
Yeah.
Right? So we all get that biting is something that kids do, hitting is stuff that kids do, and instead of trying to get that behavior to not happen, I think it's being mindful of how we respond to it and not being all like, oh my God, they're going to hit, which doesn't mean you say you're allowed to hit here.
Yeah.
Because that would be
stupid.
You
realize that this is a stage that children of this age go through, and that's just
going
to be part of your existence since you chose to work with children of that age. Mm-hmm. And that child who hit or bit isn't an evil demon.
No.
Because they do this thing that is 100% developmentally appropriate. It's a stage that they're going to go through, and some kids go through it.
Some kids hang out there a little longer.
Yeah, some kids fly right past that kind of stuff, and some kids linger, and so we turn that into a bad kid, and that colors our response to that child, and
the behavior
circles around, and you end up starting with this negative downward spiral. Often in your relationships with that child and or that family, when you create those moral issues, this is bad, and it's just not effective. And actually, in some circumstances, it can encourage the child to hang out in that area longer.
That reinforcing of the. Mm-hmm. Right, that negative attention, if the only time that I actually get your attention.
Or this is the only time I get attention. This
Jenny
is the only thing I'm good at, mm-hmm. so this is what I'm going to keep doing.
You never clean up. Of course not, because that's the only time you ever talk to me is tell me that I'm not cleaning up.
Or the kiddos, I don't know what clean up means.
True. That sometimes is an error, I think, on the adult, is that we forget that 3-year-olds might not really know what that phrase means. Mm-hmm. So being willing to change up our language to be a little bit more specific.
Yeah, if I bite Simone over there, Miss Jenny is going to come and talk to me, and she's going to sit me on her lap.
Yeah,
and she smells so good.
I mean that kind of stuff happens, mm-hmm. and so sometimes we're creating more of the thing we're trying to stop.
I like the idea of figuring out what I need to do in order to be able to meet a child wherever they are. And I talk about this as being kind of the work in our profession, and that, you know, if you're in it for the Play-Doh and the finger painting, you're not gonna last a long time because there's some work here, and meeting a kid where they are, and not where developmentally they should be or where I want them mm-hmm. to be or where their cousin was or their sister, but where is this kid right here and right now, and how am I willing to put some of myself aside in order to be fully present for them regardless? And that's exhausting work.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Exhausting.
Yeah, instead of trying to bend them into the child you would like them to be or expect
come
them
to
be.
Our comfort zone.
Yeah, we have to kind of be willing to be the pliable ones and kind of meet them where they're at and envelope that and build from there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is easy to talk about,
but hard to
and
do,
very, very difficult to execute. Well, because you have to be willing to make peace with some of your own crap, then, right? And now we're dancing with Tamara Jacobson. You know, what are your isms? What are the things? What are your hot buttons that you might not have realized you had until you started hanging out in a toddler room or a preschool room?
Yeah.
And in some circumstances, you may have a hard time seeing what this particular child might be good at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's important to have coworkers that kind of work well together and kind of balance each other. And so you can get a fresh pair of eyes in there and have somebody to turn to in those situations for some support and some feedback. Because, I mean, we've all got our hot buttons and we've all got our own temperaments and those things do come into play in these situations.
And how awesome to have that level of relationship between the staff that's working there, right? Where staff development meetings and staff trainings.
Staff trainings were okay, and yeah.
Where the staff training is focusing on the relationship between the adults who are interacting together, which is a little bit of buildup for me to tell one of my favorite stories, and I'm sure I've told this before. I was observing in a school, and I was meeting with the director in the front foyer area, and we were talking, we were like the plan for the day or whatnot, and all of the classrooms were down like one corridor, and all the doors were off to either side, so like a hallway in the classrooms were off, spoked off of that. And while we were talking, one of the teachers put her head out and very calmly but very firmly said, "I need to be tapped out." And there was this pause, now, and the director was like, "I got it, you know, they know I got their back." I mean, and to this day, when I tell that story, the reason that I get emotional when I tell it is because I had never before, and quite honestly, not since, seen that level of trust and relationship under one roof. Unfortunately, my experience, I have seen a lot of programs that have 14 different programs under the roof, like teacher A doing it this way, B doing it this way. Everybody's kind of doing their own thing and there's no continuity. Mm-hmm. And it's, so you can't get to a point of that level of trust and relationship. And what's so awesome is that at that juncture, it didn't matter what was going on in the classroom. It could have been her overreacting. It could have been that kid or somebody did something really bad. You know, yeah. I don't know. But at that moment, it didn't matter because the teacher knew that she could ask for help and assistance, yes, to calm herself down. Because at that level of escalation, I don't care how many master's degrees you have, you are not going to be effective in dealing with whatever had unfolded in that space.
Yeah.
I think our job does require a lot more self-awareness and psychological attunement than we often discuss. You know, and I realize we're not therapists. I know that, but the more I hang out in the field and the more I have conversations with people like Tamar and with Dan and with you guys, it really comes, mm-hmm, to the forefront that if you're carrying a lot of crap with you, it's going to get in the way.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean that's just the human thing. And if this is happening with you and this child that you might be having trouble with, the first time you try to reframe things with a kid, or maybe it's a coworker. What are they?
We didn't even go that avenue yet.
Part two. Because, I mean, that's part of it, too. I hear frequently from my teaching assistant, my coworker, my lead teacher, and I don't see eye to eye, using this technique, what are they good at? Mm-hmm. Heather, are you listening? May be a good tool. And the first time you try this, it will be hard because you're flexing new muscles. You're trying a new thing.
And they might not trust that you're... Like, they might not trust you either.
Yeah.
Maybe you have that history with each other.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But, I mean, doing this, making this list for yourself, you mentioned the story you told where you asked them for 10, they came up with 100. But make that list and stretch yourself. Don't come up with one. Come up with 10,
mm-hmm,
of what this person is good at. And the first time, it'll be a challenge. And as you make it a habit, it'll get easier and easier as time goes by because you'll be better at shifting your mindset and feeding the good dog instead of the evil dog when it comes to those situations. So like everything else, this is one of those things that takes a little bit of practice, a little bit of repetition to get effective at.
And to be patient with yourself,
yeah,
right? Because you might sit down, you might say, okay, today I'm going to work on this a little bit. And at first go, you might only come up with one or two things. And so don't discourage, don't throw the baby out so quick. You know what I'm saying?
Or come back to it.
Come back to it.
Yeah, or trying to push so hard that you're not seeing anything and going, I failed, so screw it. Yeah, but no, uh-uh.
Yeah, because with this kind of stuff, the first thing we do when we come up against that lizard brain is we decide this isn't going to work and we quit and abandon it. And so pushing through it that first time you try this is going to make the future, the subsequent attempts a little bit easier. Anything else on this one to wrap it up? This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Back soon with what we expect to be another episode. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. Bye-bye.
Catch you later.
See ya.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.
Hey, Jeff here. If you like the podcast, you might dig this. Dan Hodgins is going to join Lisa Murphy and I for 3 gigs in 2018. We're going to be in Portland, Oregon, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Madison, Wisconsin. We're calling it the Talking Play Tour because that's what we're going to be doing, talk and play. You can learn more at playvolutionhq.com/events. Hope to see you there.